Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for coming. I'll adopt a bit of a different strategy, I think. I'll talk. Could you put down the lights a bit? Thank you very much. Yeah. I'll talk around the images and try to be a bit biographical, and also try to talk about some of the issues which we brought up this afternoon. I liked Gus's work on the cloth, and also Nancy's overview of studio photography. And then I especially liked Zainab's last images of Georgetta, where you can see how the younger generation, if I may use that term, really try and get inside the very fabric of Lagos or of the other parts of West Africa and into the daily life of things. Probably many of you have probably read that my biography. I was born here in England, in Oxford. And when I was 4 years old, it was my first time going back to Lagos. So Lagos is really my home city. I grew up there. I have a kind of love relationship to the city, not a love-hate, just a love relationship to the city. It has many aspects which many people say it's chaotic, it's dirty, it's dangerous, it's difficult to photograph on the streets, you have to be very careful. I don't drive, so I often use public transport, and I walk a lot as well. And unlike Zainab, I'm not scared of the streets. And what I do especially is I try to negotiate my own space. That is, I keep on walking the streets until people come to accept me. They know I'm a photographer because they see my photography bag and they realize I walk very slowly, I look around, I'm just strolling more or less. After a while, they more or less come to accept me. Not always though, but most times. This image is, before I continue, I'm going to show you this evening about 20 images from Lagos. I've been working on Lagos for the last 25 years in a serious fashion. I go home every year. I now live in Berlin, but I go home every year, or almost every year, and keep on digging deeper into the city and trying to understand it, trying to image it. And what I've also realized, I have a kind of historic overview because I started in 1980, and then the city was not so crowded as it is today. So you can see a kind of progression of more congestion, more kind of chaotic life. But at the same time, I'm always questioning myself, what am I trying to do? What am I trying to see? What am I trying to say? And also get a body of work which really says something about the city. Actually, with Lagos, I've almost more or less finished, although you never really finish with a big city because the city is always expanding and continually redefining itself, and I try to understand these redefinitions. This is of Oshodi. I think one or two of Kelechi's images, and also of Uche's, no, of Kelechi's, were also of this area, different times. Here I'm just trying to, I don't know what really is. It's a focus on the buses. I use these, especially the minibuses, I use them myself as well. Nowadays I don't go very much in the bigger buses, the Molues. You can see the rubbish piled up in the middle of the road. And on the side, you can't see, there's a railway line there as well. And Oshodi is the biggest hub in Lagos. It's has overhead and under roads, and there's a railway line, there's a huge market. In fact, two or three big, very, very, very big markets. There's always a constant buzz there, day and night, late into the night. But it's become over-photographed almost, not only by us, so myself, the DOF photographers, other photographers as well, but even foreign photographers come, and one of the first things they do is go there, is a footbridge, and they start taking images. So I find it's also interesting at times how images of a city in this case, Lagos, become so cliched, what's the word in English? Like an also iconic image of the city, like the Tower Bridge or London Bridge, this kind of thing. I mean, it becomes a bit crazier. So, as I said, I keep on going back to Lagos. I often stay, my parents are still alive. Sometimes I stay with them. More often I stay with friends. And I just, as soon as I hit the ground, the next day I start moving around the city. I know the city quite well, move around. One thing I do initially, of course, is I always ask, what's the situation at the moment like? Is it very tense? Is it easygoing and so on and so forth? Many of my friends don't really know because they have cars and they go from house to work back. And then there's so many horrible stories of armed robbery and kidnappings and, I mean, unbelievable things at times. And you hear certain things like, don't use that particular road at night or don't walk in this particular area, even in the daytime at times. But sometimes I find myself there. And what I often find is that there is sometimes tension and there is danger at times as well. But always you can find a way of moving around. I must say, though, this is very much for a man. For women, it's a bit more difficult. I do realize this because, unfortunately, the so-called idea of the weaker sex and that sometimes they are actually much more vulnerable, and also children as well, too, can be very, very vulnerable. Like any city, really, Lagos has a huge history. This is an overview of Campus Square. Campus Square is now a kind of football field. On the left, you see a school. And at the middle ground, on the back, you see a part of what is called Isaleko, Old Lagos. This area used to be called the Brazilian Quarter in the old days. And it's where returning slaves from Brazil in the 19th century came back and started building their own area on the Lagos Island. The city of Lagos is a conglomeration of islands. So Victoria Island, Ikoyi Island, Lagos Island, and there's a mainland. There are many more other islands as well, smaller, but three, four major islands, and then the mainland itself. And it's constantly spreading out, sprawling further out. Campus Square, part of it used to be a cemetery, but long ago they removed this the bones, and now it's a playing field. It's quite, in fact, important football playing field in the fabric of Lagos Island, in fact, in the whole city itself. Sometimes have some very intense football matches there, usually among schools. In the background, if you look carefully, unfortunately you can't see it very well here, is the Third Mainland Bridge. And this is, I find, a very, very interesting thoroughfare through Lagos. It goes all the way from Ikoyi Island, all the way, skirts Lagos Island, and then goes on to the mainland, about skirting the mainland along the lagoon. And it's an interesting factor that Lagos actually has a lot of waterway, water fares, but we hardly use it. There are some ferries, but as a people, as the Nigerian people, we don't really look to the sea, to the water, as a means of transport. We rather put our feet on the ground. So we don't really use the waterways as such yet. We could do it more. It is happening, but not really on a big scale. So these are images which at the moment now trying to bring together into a book. Not all of these will come in the book, but some of them. And they show the kind of things which interest me personally in the city fabric. Here you see these what they call sign writing, and this is a kind of informal advertisement. And I have a great sort of, I like them a lot because they say something about us, and also in what Gus said about the fabric worn in the old days, I think in many ways now, advertising, is a form of dress, in that we try to associate ourselves with particular brands, or a particular trader will try to advertise his or what he does or his goods. And I find this very interesting. I hope you understand what I'm trying to say. Again, another form of advertising. This is in the center, the kind of geographic, not geographical center, but the kind of traffic center of Lagos Island called Tinubu Square, which is more actually more like a kind of elliptical roundabout. And at Independence in 1960, there was a functioning fountain donated by the Lebanese community. And it was, I've recently saw an old postcard of Tinubu Square. It was like a kind of, I mean, it's actually because we were formerly a British colony. So our squares and our roads were very much based on the principle of from here, actually from London itself. So Tinubu Square was actually like a square here in London, with the fountain and the traffic going around and very, very clean. 1960, and then over the years it sort of degenerated, but now they're trying to refurbish it. And in the billboard in the background, you see one of our former political leaders, Awolowo, and to his left, Gandhi, and to the right, but almost torn away, is the present-day governor of Lagos State, Tinubu. He was using these two other notables to promote his own political campaign. And this image shows you something of what I'm trying to see and say within the fabric of Lagos, trying to go in close, stand around, look around. You can see the trader who is looking at me and wondering what I'm doing. At that particular time, I was with some other friends, and so it was a bit easier. But sometimes when I'm alone, I can still do an image like this, but then usually I'll ask the trader, because sometimes they get very upset. Sometimes they're selling smuggled goods, or not necessarily stolen goods, but small smuggled goods, and then they get very upset, and it can even come to attack you or want to take your film or your camera. So usually I ask her. But in this case, I didn't ask her. And you can see the high-rise buildings and the kind of, how can I call it, the kind of fabric, the buzz and jazz of Lagos. In going out to the picture frame left is a man who is carrying recycled paper. I find this very interesting as well. When you look at images from a culture you don't really understand, trying to read the image, and I pay great attention to this kind of thing, because there are subtle informations going down which I think are important at times. Nancy showed us an image, a close up of some knees. Of a guy with a fan in his hand and as a bottle. That guy was probably making tea at the beach, and then he's using the fan to heat up the coals. Subtle things like that. Again, one of my images of billboard, advertising board. And this is part of the lagoon complex, or the waterway complex, that separates the different islands of Lagos. And this is Ido Island. I'm standing on Ido Island here, looking towards the mainland. There's a bit of lagoon there in between. Unfortunately, as I said, we often use, especially the smaller lagoons or seaways, we use them as dumping grounds. Polluted, smell a lot at times. It's very, very, very unfortunate. There's some good ideas from Nigerians who live at home to refurbish these waterways, use them as wetlands and so on, but then becomes a question of where's the money going to come from. Sometimes there's even money there, but the money disappears or filters away. So it's very, very difficult. But things are being done, definitely. I mean, I don't want to give a very negative view of this, of the country and of Lagos. And as I said, I actually do love Lagos. Again, this is one of the things I like working on. I have a whole series of images done like this all over the world, but yeah. And it's about, I call it reading the city. In fact, initially, for this talk, I wanted to just show these images, but I said it'd be too specific, too subjective. So I said, okay, let me talk more about Lagos. And the idea about reading the city is of being a kind of stranger, an outsider. You come to a city, you cross a desert or a sea, an ocean, you arrive at the harbor or at the bus terminal, and then you try to understand the city, try to go inside the city. And what do you read? You read the street signs, the directions, and so on, if you can read. Once I was flying to Bamako, Mali, my first time, I think, yeah. And just before we got to Bamako, I think, yeah. And then you have to fill in your disembarkation form. And the old man sitting next to me just gave me his passport, just pushed it in front of me. So I was wondering, what's he wanting me to do? And then someone just explained to me that he wants me to fill in his disembarkation form. And then I suddenly realized, this guy can't actually read. On the way back, a few weeks later, back to Paris, the same thing happened again. This time I was prepared, so I filled the forms in for them. But then I was thinking, and also an old man sitting next to me again, but just coincidentally, he comes to Paris and he can't read. So how does he manage? And it's interesting though, people do manage. You learn to, you know which particular underground to take or which bus to take. Sometimes they can't even read the numbers, but they know the bus stop, they know the direction, this kind of thing. In Berlin, I have a neighbor who is from Thailand, and she couldn't speak any German when she first came. So she used to travel on the underground, for example, by counting the stops. So she knew when to get on, of course, that's where she was living, and then she'd count the stops before she got off, that kind of thing. Now she speaks German, it's no problem. And return to the initial stranger coming to the city, it becomes a kind of labyrinth, confusion. How do I read the city? What do I read? Here we have, what do you call them? Nollywood posters plastered on a traffic pole, and they've been torn or through weathering, they've fallen off and so on. It's a kind of message, but what do we get from this message? I hope you're understanding me. Lagos is a city of 13 to 15 million people, and you won't believe this, but it is actually a factor. There's not a single park in the city. So no big open space within the city limits where people can go and just chill out or spend time. So like you saw in Synapse images, the only real open space in the city is at the beach. And I go there, I've been going there also for the last 20, I mean, in fact, since I was a child, actually. And it's one of the, for me, one of the easiest places to take photographs in the city, because the photographers there who ply their trade, taking photographs of people who come to spend time on the beach. Most people go to the beach not to swim, but just to spend time enjoying the sea breeze, riding these horses, and just chilling out and drinking, eating, and so on, sometimes going for sort of picnics. So I often go there, especially the weekends, to photograph the public activity. I don't know why you are laughing, but if you do what is said, you'll be warned, because there's a fine. Okay. There's nothing much really to say here. This is also part of my project on trying to read the city, trying to understand it. What is the city all about? As I said, these images, I also do this type of images here in Europe, all over the place. I took one recently in Berlin. It said, please don't, so in German, please don't urinate video. So, there's a video watching you if you this kind of thing. So, yeah. There's a fence you can see in the middle ground, and behind it is Kuramo Beach, where Synapse, that's Synapse territory. I don't go into Synapse territory, I'm afraid. And I'm on Bar Beach, actually. And this is why I asked this question recently. Does anybody know what's on this guy's head? Yeah, exactly. He's selling cigarettes and small drinks, yogurts, and so on. But it's a long, long kind of construction which he's made, and he balances on his head and he walks up and down trying to sell his products. And here again, for me, this is a kind of image which can be read on many different levels. The fencing, because that fencing actually is, I don't know why they do it, but they separate the two beaches, and you have to pay to enter the Kuramo Beach, and sometimes you even have to pay to enter Bar Beach as well. It's really weird at times. But the traders who ply up and down, they don't have to pay. Here we have a view. Lagos lies on the Atlantic Ocean. And I'm standing on somewhere near the sea, looking towards Lagos Island. You can see the what they call the downtown business area. It's on the marina, and now that is being refurbished at the moment. They're trying to get the pavements going again. And they're trying to get the proper on the marina itself, the road really first class again, and so on. Sometimes, like I usually fly Air France, so I take my flight from Berlin to Paris, change flights, and then Paris, Lagos, land on the ground. Usually, I try and get an afternoon flight, so I get in the evening, I eat, go to sleep. Next morning, I hit the city, and then you see things like this. I've been going up and down since I've been a child, so it's never really bothered me. But it does bother me, though, because especially over the years, I talk with some very close friends of mine who say, there's no need for this. It's a whole, how can I put it? It's a whole complex of problems. Bad administration, corrupt administration. I mean, we have structures there. That's why there is order in the chaos. We have structures there, and there's no need for the chaos. But somehow, things just don't work. What you often find, for example, this gutter has been cleared of the rubbish. That's what you see on the pavement here. And sometimes then the guys who are supposed to come and pick up the rubbish don't come. So what happens? Eventually, the rubbish eventually goes back into the gutter again. Things like that. So it really gets you down. And then, of course, you can see on the in the middle ground, the perennial go slow or traffic jams of Lagos. I like to stress, though, I'm not running the city down. I think this is very important. It's more a kind of, it's not a comment, it's a narrative. I don't consider myself really a documentary. I'm not trying to document something, I'm trying to tell a story. So I'm very careful how I sequence my images, and I try to get to a particular narrative critical moment. But there's no beginning, there's no end. It's a kind of a continuum, but there is a kind of beginning because some of the early images that we started with the 80s. I don't have any here, but these were recent images 2 years ago. As Sinab will probably tell you as well, even here in London, everywhere, all the cities, you have places to hang out. Unfortunately, we don't really have a kind of cafe culture at the moment, or where you go to cafes and hang out. We do have what we call bookers and places to go and drink and so on, but few and far between. And also, during the daytime, very few, because people are into trading, into business, and also or working. Working in the banks or offices and so on and so forth. One place I personally hang out is at this bookshop. It's called Glendora. And in the background, so you can see Kunle, a friend of mine over the years, and just go there, maybe spend half an hour sometimes, 2 hours, another time that we talk, discuss, argue, fight. And one day I went by, and in the foreground you see Rolling Dollar, the musician from the old days, from the 50s and 60s with High Life. And he's been, so to speak, rediscovered, especially by Kunle, and he's got new CDs out and so on. And I took a photograph of him in front of an issue of Glendora Review, which is a kind of art magazine brought out by Kun Leon irregularly. And on the issue of that Glendora, you can see him as another image of him taken by Uche from Dauphin. And I love this kind of interweaving where, I mean, as you probably heard, I'm very, very close with the Dauphin collective. They're all very, very close friends of mine. But I love the way our work interweaves. We meet up, we talk, and how can I put it, exchange ideas. And there is no competition or sense of trying to keep each other out. So rather, it's more an engagement and helping each other a great deal. And also then people like Kunle, who's also, he's also a kind of, how can I put it, a kind of honorary member as well. And many others, not only him, but others as well too. Maybe some of you here have marital problems, and so I suggest that you possibly go to Lagos for it's again part of my whole idea of trying to read the city. Here I don't have, but I've been photographing a lot of our so-called traditional religion, or Ifa or Rishas. Because for me, that is a very strong subtext to understanding our city, so Lagos in particular, and also our culture. So that is our culture, it means Nigerian culture, but Nigeria is a country of many different peoples, Igbos, Hausas, Yorubas, Efiks, Edos, so many. And each of us had our own original religion, which I feel has a very, very strong subtext still. And one of these is in the Yoruba tradition, religion, so you can call it like Ifa, it's to be healthy and also to lead a good life and to have a happy marriage. That's why you'll find now in these Pentecostal churches, they deal with these problems because they've taken over this subtext, just like the Christian church did in here in Europe as well. It's built up on what was already there. So marital problems, which is often between couples a problem, and then they try and deal with it by big revival movements or prayer or whatever. I'm back at the beach again. About the only age group who go into the water actually are children. You do get a few hardy swimmers. The sea along the whole West African coast is very, very dangerous. It's a strong undertow, and if you're not careful, it can take you far, far out. This year I was at home, and I was reading in a book, in the bookshop, Kunle's bookshop, that every eighth or tenth wave comes in very, very powerfully and pulls you out. And many people drown in trying to resist this outpull. What you should do is let it pull you out, sometimes 2-3 kilometers out, and then swim back slowly. But many people don't do that. And it is a fact, you know, these beaches, they have taken so many lives. Even sometimes the waves come in, sometimes take these kids away as well. And I've often been at the beach and seen adults warning the children, actually beating them to get away from the sea because it's so dangerous. Again, a beach scene and the selling. I found it very interesting what Gus was saying about materials, so textile materials, and it is very, still very true. It has a very strong cultural connotation on along the West African coast. On the extreme right, you see a man he's probably a northerner, and he's wearing a kaftan, and he's proud of the material, he's proud of his stance on the cloth and everything. And then from the extreme left, you see a woman, it's probably lace material or brocade, pointing at something. And she too, I mean, these are people who are proud of their, I think this was on a Sunday. So of course, Sunday clothes again is something special. These are three images. This is the first one of what I call serious prayer. So please, I don't want anybody to laugh. Because this lady was really praying seriously. And I think most of you can see that I had a kind of idea about with the three empty chairs. She wasn't sitting on them, but she was holding a Bible in her hand and really praying heavily. And this aspect is very, very important, I would say, all over Black Africa. A very, very strong religious fervor at the moment. It's been, I would say since the 50s, 60s, it's really, but of late, the last 20, 30 years, very, very powerful in South Africa, East Africa, West Africa, even in North Africa with Islam, very, 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 very strong. And then you get what I call breakaway movements, individual movements. This lady was just by herself, praying, and she was walking up and down, praying. You see her, the next image, coming back again, praying seriously, and then the third image, just two images, sorry. And then you see her, she was praying again. And this was 2 years ago. This year, and I think it's also, I'm almost sure it's the same lady, because this, I find this strange. I've been going to this beach for 20, 30 years, and over the years, I've got to know some people, because I've seen them every time I go home. I see them on the beach, and I've actually introduced myself. I say, do you remember me? Yes, God. And they remember me too. Say, yes, I remember you. So we become acquaintances, let's say. But I think this lady this year, she came up to me. She was looking much more poorly, and asked me to give her some money. And then it struck me, you know, the kind of, I mean, they come to the beach, sometimes they have, I mean, they have not, literally nothing to eat. And then they pray and, you know, do their, whatever their rituals are. And then just sit there. And some of them, of course, earn money, actually, by praying for others. And then they'll give them money. So there's a whole kind of subculture there happening all the time. This is the neighbor beach to Kurama Beach. Also on Kurama Beach, there's also praying going on as well. In the foreground is Emeka Okereke, one of the DOF members. This is at the French Cultural Center, which unfortunately is no more. These European cultural centers are centers of meeting places for the, especially for young people. They learn the languages there, the German cultural center, they learn German, French, and the British. They do more sort of, what they call the British Council. They have a library, or they used to have a library. They have all kinds of different programs going on. And the French Cultural Center was a big meeting place because it had a very good theater program, dance program, and language program, of course. In the background, you see a painting by one the painter or a graphic artist who did Fela Ransom Kuti's LP albums. I hope I'm not boring you. I have a very close friend, Yinka Duarte. He's a lawyer. And he lives on Lagos Island in the so-called rough areas. Not rough area, but used to be a very, in fact, a very wealthy area in the old days, but has become very rough in the last 20, 30 years. But he's refurbished his house recently, done it very well. And the family house used to be where this boy is living. He's lying on the bench. And what happened once, about 30 years ago, was the house needed some repairs done, and the carpenter came and pulled one particular beam out, and the whole house collapsed. It's one of these old Brazilian houses, and somehow the carpenter didn't understand what was going down, pulled a beam out, the whole house collapsed. And they've never built the house up again, so that neighboring plot, people sort of squat, and Yinka tolerates that because Yinka is from that family of the Duarte. That's their family plotter, and this guy was just sort of chilling out there. And you see in the background a woman; she was actually cooking. It's another aspect. I think you saw in the images of Georgette as well the different ways different standards of living in the city. You get, I mean, people who live in opulence, you can't even believe it's here. And then you get people who live in poverty. It's so horrible at times, you just can't stand it. In fact, you just don't know what to do. It's really very bad at times. This is a scene on Ikoyi Island, so southwest Ikoyi. It's raining. I was shooting from some big building. You can see the minibus going by, and somebody walking in the rain selling, what do you call them, sunglasses. This road, Awolowo Road, has been refurbished about 3-4 years ago. So you can see the drainage now. They cover the drains. That's in the foreground and also in the background if you look carefully. And then this used to be a high quality residential area. This is also part of the history of Lagos. And then slowly but surely, people started, they left their houses, rented them out, and someone started, redeploying the house into a kind of, either into a shop or into a bank or into a hairdressing saloon. So now the whole area is more or less a kind of trading area. People still live there though, but, and this has happened so often, it's happening now on Victoria Island, which is one of the most elite areas, where, and it was supposed, just for living, but slowly people just change it, and they're not supposed to do this, but somehow they manage, usually by what they call bribe and corruption. Here we have, for me, an image which really works, that many of the issues I'm trying to deal with in the city come all together in this particular image. You can see the braiding from the sky coming down. This is actually a giant's hairstyle, which is just falling down. I mean, you can't see his legs because he's so big, but actually it's wires from the post. People tap from the electrical wires. And then it becomes so ridiculous at times. Sometimes the poles fall down. And then you get the sign writing and the fencing and the kind of, I call it a kind of jazz or something. The building on the extreme left is one of the oldest Brazilian buildings in Lagos. Built in the, I think, at the end of the 19th century. And I heard recently it's going to be converted into a museum by the Brazilian embassy. I hope it's true, because I've been inside the building. It's a wonderful building, really run down, unfortunately. Has old wooden floors, old pilasters, and the whole kind of things. And you can see a bit of the balconies there. Fascinating building, but really, really run down. It stands on the corner of Tinubu Square. So I'm telling you all this to show you how I tried to get into the nitty-gritty of the city. Back at the beach again. This is a prayer meeting, so please. This is a scene you often experience in Lagos, something which I'm sure Sena would like to experience. These three women were really annoyed with a bus driver. Really shouting. So they were so enraged, they didn't notice me photographing them. I was right up in their face, or you can see this, and they didn't really notice. And this is part of the daily life on the city, especially for those who use public transport, because it's a real hustle at times. You sit squashed into buses, you pay your fare, there's no change. You arrive at your destination, they say, okay, wait, we're going to get your change. And sometimes you can be waiting half an hour, they still haven't found your change, and they're hoping you'll go away. This is the kind of thing. Or, I don't know. I mean, usually nobody gets involved, but sometimes some people do. In fact, I saw this year a woman fighting an Okada driver, actually fighting with him. So we got involved to tell her to cool down. What's the point of fighting? But sometimes these fights can get very, very, very nasty. Yeah, here you see there was a word I think Nancy used where the negotiating. In fact, the lady in the middle has just got off the moped taxi and she's paying the guy. And this again is something which many people looking at this image will not really understand unless they've been there or they know the whole situation. Behind them is a minibus with the back window has been destroyed, so they've just plastered it over. And you can see the wiring and so on and so forth. I work so spontaneously, intuitively. I always have my camera. I don't carry it out. I put it in the bag. When I see a situation like this, I just shoot. Most times now, this area, they more or less, they don't know me personally, but they know more or less what I'm into. But you still have to be very careful. Once I was arrested here, and I was sitting inside one of these buses, and I shot out of the bus, and the policeman saw me. He rushed to the bus, said, "You, come out!" Dragged me out, and took me to the police station. And fortunately, I managed to get out. I didn't have to pay any bribe, nothing. I got my camera back, got my film back, everything. Everything was okay. And later on, I told a friend, another photographer, Don Barber, and he said, you would have hit the policeman. But it's not my style. So we come to the last image. I hope I'm not boring you. This is the last image. And this, again, is maybe I'll tie up again with the whole studio thing, because this is actually probably an image done in a studio, or in a studio kind of situation. It's for the mobile phones from MTN, which is a company from South Africa. They're very dominant now, unfortunately, or the country, dominant in business in Nigeria. It's along the marina. And you can see the kind of sort of bus stop in the around midday, so not too many buses at the moment. So I've taken you on a kind of mini journey on Lagos. I hope you enjoyed it, and continue next time.
Thank you very much for the presentations. We are now asking the four speakers to take chairs on the podium at the front. We'll have a brief discussion, panel discussion, chaired by Augustus Casely Hayford, and then open up to questions from the floor. While the speakers are taking their seats, I would just like to remind you that when you want to ask a question, please wait for one of the roving microphones, because we need to have the microphones for you when you ask a question, so that the audience on the internet and subsequently on the recordings can hear your questions. So if you have any questions, please do wait for one of us to come around with one of the portable microphones.
Is there any questions? In the middle here, yes, the gentleman.
Questions. I enjoyed very much the symbolism of the cloth. I get a very special feeling when I see people, African people, dressed in national dress. Compared with them, I feel bland and anonymous. My question is the dress used for an overall national statement, or is it overwritten by personal statements, for example, single, married, bereaved, or whatever, or is that not important in the culture?
I think it's used in different ways in different contexts, and that
my family are Ghanaians who have connections to Sierra Leone and Nigeria, and we have a multiplicity of different genealogical connections to different ethnic groups across West Africa, and within each one of those different areas, that cloth can be used slightly differently, and that in terms of things like ceremony, then of course one may bring out cloth which had been used by one's ancestors in very particular ways. But traditionally now, I think it's used an awful lot just in the way that it is in the West as a kind of fashion accessory. But there are, of course, traditions like funerals, like weddings, where cloth has very, very particular significances, and it can be used in that context.
It's really a question for Zainab and Anakin Abode about their photographs, whether they've been exhibited in Nigeria, and if they have been, what the response has been. I was thinking particularly about your images of the girls, some of whom are prostitutes.
Have they actually been shown in Nigeria? That particular series was shown at the French Cultural Centre and about a year and a half ago. And you do get a lot of people coming, and being very judgmental about it, because I mean, like I said to you, most people don't go to the beach, and because the beaches that I go to, especially Kuramo, is actually on the island, and most of the people that live on the island that actually are landlords on the island are quite wealthy people, so they come to these shows not to buy and not particularly because they're interested or But they do come as being very judgmental, and they want to know what are these girls doing? What shouldn't they be at school? And there's a serious lack of understanding about the way these girls live. I mean, some of them, like I said, are hairdressers and would really rather open their own hairdressing studios or salons or whatever. But because of the situations that they're forced to be in, and most of these girls actually don't live in Lagos, but because they come, people are, why do they bother coming to Lagos if this is what they're going to do? So there is a little bit of I haven't had anyone personally, attack me about the images, but I mean, they do attack the subject, shall I say.
But what about the idea of photography in the contemporary sense?
Yeah.
You know, rather than, I mean, we've actually, today, that we've seen a sort of, followed a trajectory, a transition from the sort of portrait studio photography into what is effectively art. And I'm just interested in how that interfaces with the kind of a local cultural understanding of how photography can be used.
This year I did a workshop in Lagos with a new group of young photographers, and they now have too formed a collective called Black Box, so they're the next collective after Dove. And at the end of the workshop, it was on photography and football within the city. We had an exhibition, and lots of people came. There's a big interest in photography, but they can't afford the prices. They want it for maybe about £5, £10, £15. So it's very difficult to make a living doing so-called art photography. But there's a growing awareness of its importance. I think this growing awareness comes because of the internet. Now people look and can see what's happening, and also because of our film industry, Nollywood. So it's a kind of a growing visual culture. It's very interesting. This visual culture was in other parts of West Africa quite well developed, especially the French-speaking parts, because of the FESPACO and the films they used to make there. But now in Nigeria, it shot up as well because of the Nollywood, so-called Nollywood films, home videos. And then also we have a very strong newspaper culture, and the newspapers too do sometimes daily or usually weekly, sort of mini reports on aspects of the city, not just Lagos, all over the federation. So people, there's a kind of growing awareness. I personally have exhibited some of these images at home, but the people who understand are usually younger people, so aspiring artists, students, maybe to other aspects as well, and so on. But the so-called general public, very, very few. It's also interesting, I've noticed the same thing also with our literature. Many of our parents' generation, they've hardly ever read Achebe or Soyinka and so on and so forth. So, but it's growing, constantly growing all the time.
And are you finding that it's possible to access the international art markets with ease and success? I mean, is that happening for collectives like Depth of Field?
I think so. I mean, like Makubali said, there's access to the internet now. A lot of the artists are now traveling and doing international shows, so they know what's going on out there, and they're very keen to tapping into what's going on in the international scene. So certainly, I think it's growing.
And yeah, it's a growth thing. It's very much a growth thing. It's constantly growing. But there are very few African photographers from the whole continent who are really successful in the sense like some of the German photographers of the Becker School or some of the American photographers. But it's gradually coming up there.
Yeah, can I also say, just pick up on what Nancy said earlier about the group Depth of Field meeting up as a coincidence in Bamako. I mean, it really wasn't, because it was actually engineered by I keep calling him Uncle Bode, Akinbode, but he is Uncle Bode. He actually engineered the entire process. And the growth of arts, and especially artists in Nigeria, is because of people like him who, use their own initiative and actually come back, through the Goethe Institute or the French Cultural Center. But it's always sadly, Nigerians in diaspora that come back to sort of assist and bring up new, you know, up-and-coming artists.
I always want to stress this. It's not just me. Mm. There's Pau Jekere, Don Baba, Jide Adeniyi. There are many, many others as well. Even your father, your parents. So people always, it's a group thing.
A communal
thing. So many of us coming together and helping each other. That's I think I want to really stress this, because I don't want to the focus to just be on me, but on everybody.
No, I mean, but what I am saying is that it is only people who are particularly interested. I mean, people who have the money and the means, certainly who have no interest in the arts, would never think about bringing up and coming, you know, painters or, you know, dancers or photographers.
There's a question here. I've come. Oh, I'm sorry.
This was addressed to Akin Bodhi, but it's not really a question, actually. It's more of a tribute, because you've beaten me to it. I was actually going to say the same thing, a tribute to you for what you have done. And I know you're very committed to helping young artists, the next generation of photographers, and you've beaten me to it. And I know Zainab touched on this, and also Nancy touched on this, but we do know that you've done a lot, and some of your friends have done a lot to bring the recognition and the support to the younger generation. So it is a great reflection on what's going on in that city, I think, that you can get together and help this new generation have that confidence. Thank you.
Hold on. I would like to say it's a continuing process. A friend of ours, Jide Adeniyi Jones, he would have been here today, but he came through London on Wednesday, but couldn't stay, had to go back home to Lagos. And about 25 years ago, we were at a party here in around Kensington, I think, and he studied photography here in London. I said, buddy, come, let me show you something. During the party, yeah? And he showed me two books of black American photographers, called Black Photographers Annual. And it so impressed us, the two of us. He said, we have to go home and we must do something, you know. Unfortunately, he went home, I stayed in Europe, but we're still very close and we've been going up and down all the time. That's the kind of history behind this. So that it's not just me or Jide, also the black photographers in the States. And also they did something similar. Especially one guy called Roy DeCarava and others too. They really encourage younger photographers. So it's a constant, it's a kind of, like at the sea, the waves. Huh? So the waves come in, they go out again. So we've come, and then the others will come as well. Because the DOF photographers are also encouraging others as well too. Huh? So in this workshop I did this year, most of the photographers, of all of them, were very close friends of DOF. So it's a kind of like passing on the baton all the time. Thank you.
Sorry. It's been absolutely fascinating seeing photography working in this way, and I feel I really experienced a lot about cultures I knew relatively little about. But I wanted to ask Akin Bodhi a specific question. You make it very clear and demonstrate very clearly how you're desires to get right under the skin of reality, of a city, of life in the city in Lagos. I just really want to know why you choose to photograph in black and white rather than colour. Like Zainab, of course, is using colour, and a certain colour seems to give me a lot of information about things which I think she's trying to get across. You've chosen a different strategy. I'd just be very interested to hear you speak about that.
It's very much a personal choice. It's also a reflection of my age, I think, because I grew up in the 50s and 60s when black and white was much more popular then. And I really took it in then already. I do work in color as well. I do work. But I feel, especially for what I'm trying to really say, black and white does it better. That's all I can really say. I got nothing much more. But I want to stress, both mediums work well. Both mediums work well.
I'm going to cheat and get two questions in quickly. The first one is that I personally hate cities and rarely live in them or work in them, travel only when necessary in them. But I have worked a little bit in African villages and in villages in South and Central America. And I find them very fascinating because the people haven't changed very much in the last, at least my 10 years of experience. I wonder if you could address why in cities as opposed to why elsewhere. There's so much that isn't in the city. And then the second question is, what do you think is happening with the democratization of photography and art in terms of digital content and distribution in Africa and elsewhere?
I got the second question, but not the first one, I'm sorry. And that was about the distribution and of images in Africa.
Digital images.
Oh yeah. What's that guy, the South African guy that came to Bamako? Remember him? Oh, Africa Online. Yes, that's the one. I mean, that's the only one that I know of particularly. I mean, they're South African-based, and he's actually very effective at actually constantly, he has a network of photographers. He goes to most of the biennales, like he was at Bamako last year, networking with the photographers and actually trying to find a way of constantly having a library, shall I say, of digital images for photographers based within Africa. And so he has a way of actually dispersing these images, I think, you know, through the papers, via internet and through magazines, etc. But I mean, there aren't so many that I know of. I mean, I know a few people who are actually specifically working maybe as photojournalists who work for AFP or Reuters, and they disperse their own images through their own particular press agencies or whatever. But I know of Africa Online as the only one that I know of particularly that is quite adept at facilitating that.
One of the things I'm interested in is that depth of field is, it's very much a sort of Lagos-based collective. And in a way that what the digital media offers is the potentiality to work online and to almost for one's physical locality not to necessarily be as important as it might have been once upon a time. And do you think that is going to change the sense of relationship between photographers and a sense of real sort of Africanness that you get in some of the photographs?
Absolutely.
But particularly Nigerianness and particularly a sense of a Lagosian narrative.
Lagosness. Well, I mean, I hope I'm answering the question correctly here, but that's sort of happening with us as depth of field at the moment, because I mean, I'm sort of based in Lagos and Mecca is based in France at the moment, which has been in Germany. And because we have the internet, we have the access to, you know, electronic mail, we can actually work. I mean, the work that we did in the Niger Delta crisis, I only saw Emeka and I saw the rest of the guys for one meeting, and we're supposed to work as a collective, but we were able to do our own work and just disperse our own little, you know, cities where we were and still be able to put the work together coherently, you know, to deadline, to the exhibit, to the Biennale at the right time. So I mean, the electronic accessibility of images is definitely a positive thing, I think.
But do you worry about the kind of aesthetic?
A little bit different than that, in the sense that not our people who consider themselves professional photographers affected by the electronic media, but is the electronic media affecting digital content in the sense of photography in Africa? You know, if you were to go back and say, you know, 3 years ago we didn't have YouTube, and now it's a source of information. I mean, I get notes from colleagues that say, look at this on YouTube, and you can see what's happening in, and then they note a country. Mm. Now, is that same, what's the impact of that on Africa and on you?
And I'm not sure sort of in the past year, but over the years, there is an issue of steady electricity supply in order to sustain online. So there are internet cafes, and those, of course, would favor people living in urban areas. And so the photographers that are in urban areas and either have their own internet access or working with internet cafes. But if I understand your question correctly, a barrier in terms of democratization reaching out into the vast sort of rural areas in various countries would somewhat be dependent. I mean, unlike mobile phones, where satellite access, of course, you know, takes away the need for cables, and in fact, it was perhaps taken up in some parts of South Africa before some parts of the United States. The internet is a bit more complex. It's not, again, favoring urban areas.
Although I was trying to separate the two questions also. So, sorry, two questions. One was, why cities and not villages?
Mm. Yeah, but just another reply is the democratization is quite strong in South Africa, less so in other parts of Africa, as regards getting images online quickly because of the power problems here. But this year in March, there was a sudden storm in Lagos, and a high-rise building, three floors at the top collapsed. So I went there the next day and I saw people taking images with their mobile phones. I've never seen this before. So it will eventually happen as well, because I don't know whether they have it here in England, but now in Germany they've had things like anybody can send in stuff. Maybe you'll be lucky and your image will be published. And you get paid well too, not small, well paid. And people have been doing this. Somebody killed himself by flying his plane into the ground just before the Reichstag, and a lady took the photograph with a digital camera and sold it immediately. Yeah. So that probably going to happen as well eventually. Yeah.
But there is something else though, because when I look at depth of field photographs, I do get a sense of them really being about an urban mm-hmm. narrative, and in that way that they are as much connected to New York or to London as they are to anywhere, and that. I do actually kind of have a real sense of sympathy with the question, because what's happening in the rural areas and how are we, what's happening in the suburbs? You know, is there a connectivity with that? And what are the photographic traditions that are beginning to develop in those areas? I mean, are they in some way different? What's happening in those areas, and how are we going to find ways of pulling that into a broader network of art distribution?
You see, the thing is, Africa south of the Sahara. Pardon me?
At the Sahara, just at that.
Yeah, okay. We went south of the Sahara as well. The so-called life which really bubbles and is in the cities. So then you'll find people who have cameras, people who have, they're in the cities, you see. And then now, there are definitely things to shoot at in the villages as well, definitely. But working with the Bamako Biennale, I've noticed that a very few photographers on the continent photograph in the countryside or in the villages, or landscapes. Unless, of course, they're photographing a festival, something special. But but there are some, I've noticed. And actually, it's interesting, I've noticed sometimes more women than men, because the countryside is quieter. It's easier for them to work there. Yeah. So I've met one, and I've heard of another one, both in Nigeria, working in the countryside a bit. So it's possible. But the emphasis is still very much in the cities, because schools are there, business is there, I live there, this kind of thing.
It's the same in filmmaking, isn't it, that there has been this transition to, because there was that period in West African filmmaking where there were so many films that were these beautiful wide shots of mm-hmm. broad West African landscape, and that they now, as digital and as video has become much more prevalent, that films seem much more urban, and that there's a very different kind of cutting method, different sort of filming, and you do have a completely different energy, and I do get some of that energy when mm-hmm. I look at the depth of field photographs.
Can I just say something else? I mean, when I initially moved back to Nigeria from England, Uncle, but I don't know if you remember, the first body of work that I did was of my dad's village, Ota. Remember the Ota series that I did? I don't know if Nancy ever saw that body of work, but I really enjoyed doing the work, because it was really, really chilled out. It was in the village. I was just coming from Europe and I just wanted to feel Africa, and but the pictures were so dull. I just thought they were so boring. There was nothing going on in there. And whenever I presented the work, and then I started doing some work in Lagos, and whenever I sent the work to people, they would always pick the city work over the work you know, that are done in the village. And because there is no money in photography in Nigeria, absolutely nothing whatsoever, it made no sense to me to spend my money shooting film in the village and just having loads of negatives. It made no financial sense to me. I was using my own money. So if people wanted to see pictures of the city where I live, which I, you know, got to love, then of course I was going to make pictures of the city.
There are some South African photographers I know who have done rural series, and it takes a real commitment again. Mm. And then, you know, Andrew Shabangu, yeah, and he's gone back and back, but it takes time, and it is quieter. Mm. And the images have a certain stillness about them. Mm. It's a very different image. Sorry.
It's okay. I've got two questions, but the first one is that I've been to a lot of the Global Photography Now events, and one of the things that struck me, and from different parts of the world, photography has been kind of thrown profoundly into question, and traditional forms have been thrown into question through kind of theoretical and almost performative or relational practices. For example, photography from the Middle East or from the Baltic states or the post-Soviet states. Mm. And India, there was the Sarai or Rax Collective, mm. who were kind of linked with activists. So, and there was a kind of theoretical program that sort of goes hand in hand with the practice. And it's quite clear that this is going on in West Africa as well, because I can hear it in the discourses that you've kind of operated, talking about reading the image, you as a woman going into certain areas, working with women and works. I just wonder whether you could say something about the kind of theoretical frames and how those are kind of activated or worked in relation to each other. Because I can hear from your discourse that it is actually going on. For example, you talk about reading the image and the kind of fabric of the city.
One of the things I was trying to do was to try to place photography into the particular kind of material culture dash art history that I find very pervasive when I visit West Africa. And I do think that there is, in a way, a kind of an inherent struggle between the trajectory that pulls the contemporary art history from that into the future. But then running parallel to that, there is, of course, a very, very different kind of art history that is being formed, which is, it is the international art history. It is kind of that post-modernity. And that one of the clever things I think about depth of field is that it can actually straddle those two things, that you can see them playing with time, with rhythm, with ideas of texture and fabric, and all of these things which would root it very much within a local aesthetic. But these also are things which play with very, very contemporary art historical considerations that plant it at the very forefront, on the very edge of the crest of the wave of the considerations of what happens beyond post-modernity. And bringing these two traditions together is inherently complex, and that I actually think as a collective that they're playing with very, very complex historical and art historical traditions and managing to combine and to weave them together very, very effectively.
Yeah, and I feel it very much in your work as well. But can I just ask one more question of you, theoretically? I suppose the what I felt very much in all the practices, but in your paper, was this, when you talked about the transubstantiation that goes on with the sort of trying to keep a kind of continuity in the kind of generic field through a special person investing the work in a special way.
Yes.
And then, you know, that seemed to sort of tie in very much with certain sort of traditions in kind of international ways of thinking art, almost like the ready-made.
Yes.
That a certain type of, an artist like a priest is in a position to transubstantiate any ordinary object into something that has an elevated sort of status. and then this other trajectory, which was the later trajectory that you sort of mentioned, which is more kind of an encounter with a supplementary form of excess,
yes.
which becomes almost evental, that actually breaks the generic field,
yes.
which was the later work.
Yes.
And so there are many, many kind of very, very rich theoretical things that I felt going on in this extraordinary practice. Mm. So I just wanted to.
Oh, thank you. But I do think that one of the interesting things about depth of field is an awareness of those different kinds of narrative and a bringing together of them. And I think Lagos is absolutely the place that it can and should happen. And one of the most eloquent practitioners of this is Dylan Prizalike, the sculptor,
oh, yeah.
who effectively is his practice, that he lives his practice, that he's someone, his name is also the junk man, and he's someone who creates practice from the detritus of Lagos, this incredibly crazy city, and that he creates it into this wonderful world that within which he lives. But these are fantastic sculptural pieces that both link into these narratives that we're talking about, which are about the past and about the future, but at the same time that they have an understanding of all of these art historical traditions, and they actually play with those narratives so that there almost be something which is happening beyond post-modernity, where one's actually aware of the play, but you're actually trying to center it very much within an art historical tradition. And this is incredibly complex stuff, and I think in a way that Lagos, this city which is becoming something that happens beyond the city, is exactly the kind of backdrop in which those possibilities really become real, and I think depth of field are managing to capture that in a really fantastic and amazingly sensitive way.
I think it speaks to the strength of a collective, because you have six individual artistic intelligences that are, of course, encouraging each other and are sympathetic veins running through the work, but they're also possible to work in very different ways, whilst influencing and encouraging each other. And so you do have some who are very concerned with the fabrication of the image, how they're manipulating it and to what effect. And others who perhaps are looking at how people in Lagos fabricate a community. I mean, I remember you talking about the young people in Kurama Beach, how they really do have a sense of looking after each other and have found a place to live and to yeah. be. However difficult that might be for us to look at, and a kind of a precarious lifestyle, they've created something there. And I thought of that again, of the woman praying, had sort of created this moment in the city for herself, and that is something which an urban environment makes more clear, how we're sort of constructing a little world out of people who are in sympathy with things around us.
Although I would like to stress, many of the photographers, not just in Nigeria also, they don't really think about theory so much. They live it more. Yeah. Duff is an interesting example. Uche, James Iroha, he studied art, sculpture. He's a sculpture major. You did photography. Film and photography. Emeka, who is now in Paris, he's also into visual arts. But Kelechi did law. And Amaizi did
business.
Yeah, you see. So now they bring in different sensibilities. But what is very interesting, though, is when they meet on their Friday meetings, and I've been to some of their meetings, then they start buzzing off each other. And sometimes other friends come along. So it's a kind of ongoing theoretical and practical discourse, engagement, with many, many, many things, because it's not just a city sometimes. It's sometimes things of getting petrol, fuel, accessing film, downloading stuff, so many things. And then sometimes these practicalities in driving, you start thinking about it in a theoretical basis. And then, of course, they also access they do read about what is happening elsewhere in the world. They have the books. They talk about it, and now they're taking part in these different, exhibitions, the big, like in Seville or in Snap Judgments in New York. And then it gets even deeper. So, because...
Is that changing your practice, though, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I'm not so sure if it's for the good at the moment, because it means we spend a lot of time apart from each other, a lot more than we would like. But I think for now it is positive, because we're obviously imbibing things from other, you know, cultures. I mean, I come to England and I see things, you know, I can't wait to go back and show Uche or the rest of them. And, you know, they can't wait for me to come back with catalogues. So, you know, we can all sort of, it's amazing. But I mean, maybe we are, you know.
But the particularity of depth of field that links you to Lagos, is that something which will sustain? It won't just become a collective which is effectively like-minded people who are international artists.
Mm. Well, I think Lagos will always bring us back together. I mean, of all the six of us, there's only three of us that were actually born in Lagos. But I mean, it will always, you know, link us together, because we met there, we started working in Lagos. It is the one thing that links us together. I mean, you know, we were asked to do some work in Stuttgart. Nuremberg. We had a project to do in Nuremberg over a weekend, and it was six of us, and the pictures just, I mean, it was Germany, but they looked like Lagos to me. I mean, when the pictures came out, it was, you know, what are you guys doing? So,
I can bode in the future of West African photography. Is it healthy?
Oh, very healthy, very, very healthy. And it's constantly expanding. I mean, you can't really fix it. There's so much happening, really much happening. This recent exhibition, Snap Judgments, showed you very different aspects. There's a book just come out on by Fidon on recent, it's called, Vitamin PH or something. And there are about three or four West Africans, in fact Nigerians, Yinka Shoni Barry is in it, with photographs. Huh? And this lady from the north, what's her name again?
Fatima Tuga.
And so one or two other people. And you can see that it's constantly expanding. And one thing with all the arts, you can't keep still. I mean, if you want to do your work. So we keep on moving. Mm. And then we feed off each other, we discuss, we talk, and so on.
Nancy, what do you think, the future?
Future's bright. It's not orange. I thought one of the exciting things for me about the potential photography, in particular in Nigeria, which we've been talking about a lot tonight, was that there are very strong art schools in Nigeria with some wonderful sculptural and painting traditions in the 20th century. But in a way, I saw photography as a way for younger people to somewhat break free of those, to take them and to move somewhere new. And it has possibilities, I think, you know, across the continent that way, which links into our material practices in the way that you were sort of explaining, but that frees them from following, and Senegal as well, some very strong schools with very strong particular styles of painting. And I think the possibilities are infinite. I think it is important that it be supported as much as possible. I think, you know, within the countries where it originates, as well as outside, and we keep these linkages going so that we can support work in the future.
And Zaina, the future?
Very positive, very exciting. I mean, everybody wants to be a photographer in Lagos now, which is a very, very good thing. But it is good with people like and access to digital media, because I mean, when I started, you know, taking pictures in Lagos and looking for film, looking for chemicals, you know, I think all of that's gone now. People can act, and digital media is a lot cheaper. It's getting cheaper now, so people can, you know, can actually access it. So it's very positive. I'm very, very optimistic about photography in West Africa, and certainly Lagos or in Nigeria.
I think in your two hands, and also the Depth of Field Collective, I think it really has got a rosy future. And, thank you, everyone, for coming. And I want to thank the Tate team, everyone.
Absolutely.
They've been absolutely wonderful, great hosts. And, you know, it's been a really wonderful afternoon. And I think this has been a really fitting culmination to a really wonderful series of discussions over recent weeks and months. And I want to thank everyone involved, but particularly our speakers. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.